Have you ever found yourself reading an article generated by AI and it's grammatically flawless, like completely factually perfect, but somehow incredibly exhausting to get through?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time.
Right. It's like walking into a perfectly sterile, brightly lit hospital room
Yeah, that is a great way to put it.
because there's absolutely nothing technically wrong with the architecture, but you just feel this visceral urge to leave immediately.
You do. You just want to get out of there.
Exactly, because it just lacks any sign of actual human life.
Yeah, it's the uncanny valley, but specifically for prose. I mean, the vocabulary is technically correct and the punctuation is in the right place, but the underlying music of the language is entirely missing.
The music is missing. I love that.
Because your brain recognizes almost instantly that there is no human heartbeat behind the text.
Okay, let's unpack this because that invisible heartbeat is exactly what we're decoding in today's deep dive.
We are, and we have a really amazing source for this.
We do. We are exploring a fascinating, highly detailed blog post titled, I Wrote a 435-Line Chinese Writing Guide for AI.
Which sounds incredibly intense.
It is. And the mission today is to figure out exactly why AI writing defaults to this soulless state. And, more importantly, how one writer actually managed to reverse engineer the elusive human touch into a strict, machine-readable system prompt.
Right, and the origin of this project is just highly relatable for anyone making content right now.
Totally. So the author of our source material runs a bilingual tech blog.
And for a long time, they were relying on this very efficient standard pipeline, right? They'd write the original thought pieces in English and then deploy the AI model Claude to translate and adapt those posts into Chinese.
Which makes sense. It's a huge time saver.
Exactly. And they had successfully published 83 of these automated Chinese blog posts. It felt like a perfectly streamlined operation.
Until a friend stepped in.
Right. A friend delivered some brutally honest feedback. They basically pointed out that while the core insights were really strong, the actual reading experience was just incredibly stiff and robotic.
And I mean, when you build an automated system, your initial instinct is usually to defend it, right?
Oh, for sure. You want to say, no, it's working perfectly.
But when the author actually went back and reviewed those 83 posts with fresh eyes, they realized the friend's critique was just undeniable.
It was glaring.
Yeah, the text was saturated with these incredibly wooden, overly formal transitions. Feist is like, it is worth noting that this technology has demonstrated significant advantages.
Or, as a practitioner who has been deeply engaged in the AI field.
Right. It sounds like someone reading the executive summary of a corporate white paper at like a casual dinner party.
It really does, and the author describes this perfectly. They said the sentences read like Chinese wearing an English costume.
Wow, that's a brilliant way to phrase it.
It is. And there's actually a recognized linguistic term for this phenomenon in the Chinese digital ecosystem, which translates roughly to translation ease.
Translation ease. So it's not just an issue of the AI having a weak vocabulary.
No, not at all.
It's actually suffering from the baggage of its own massive, highly formal education.
Precisely. Because if we look at the underlying mechanism, like the actual why behind this robotic tone, we have to examine the training data.
The diet of the AI, essentially.
Exactly. Large language models are basically probability engines, and they're trained on a specific diet of text. For translation tasks, that diet consists heavily of dense academic papers, millions of Wikipedia entries, dry newswire copy, international treaties.
So just the driest material imaginable.
Right. So when the AI is predicting the next word in a sentence, the probability weights heavily favor formal, structured academic tokens. It learned the absolute mathematics of correct structural language.
But it completely missed the messy psychological nuances of engaging language.
It's
But identifying the problem is the easy part, right? Knowing that the AI sounds like a textbook is one thing. Actually defining the opposite, figuring out what makes human writing genuinely captivating, is notoriously difficult.
Incredibly hard. You can't just open a prompt window and tell a machine, hey, write better.
Or be more engaging. It doesn't know what that means. So instead of tweaking the AI blindly, the author realized they had to go straight to the human masters to establish a baseline.
Which was a massive undertaking.
Yeah, they spent days doing incredibly close analytical reads of the absolute top writers on WeChat. We're talking about massive public account platforms over there, heavy hitters with millions of followers.
And just for some context, these aren't niche experimental bloggers. These are the most widely read tech and commentary voices in that entire digital ecosystem.
Right, they command huge audiences.
And the author's research wasn't focused on the topics these people were covering. It was a structural deconstruction of their craft.
They were trying to answer the psychological questions, like, why does this specific arrangement of words force the reader to keep scrolling?
Exactly. Why does a certain paragraph structure trigger an emotional response?
Well, the author's documentation reveals four massive discoveries about the anatomy of human resonance that emerged from this deep analysis.
And these principles are incredibly insightful, regardless of what language you happen to be writing in.
Definitely. So the first major revelation is about foundational structure, specifically spiral versus linear logic.
Right. So if you analyze standard English writing, especially in business or technology, the default architecture is entirely linear.
It's very point A to point B.
Exactly. It's a thesis-first approach. You state your primary argument right at the top, you present your supporting evidence in a neat chronological row, and you wrap it up with a logical conclusion.
The reader is just following a straight, uninterrupted track from start to finish.
Right. It functions a lot like a mathematical proof. But the top-tier WeChat writing completely abandons that straight line.
It operates on a spiral structure instead, right?
Yes, a spiral.
Mm.
So instead of hitting you over the head with a thesis statement in the first sentence, the writer starts with a scene.
Like an evocative image.
Exactly.
Yeah.
An image, a highly personal anecdote, or maybe just a frustrating daily moment that the reader has almost certainly experienced.
So the strategy is to pull the reader into an emotional state first, establish the real-world stakes, and then allow the insight to naturally emerge from that feeling.
That's it, exactly. The linear approach attempts to persuade through logic. The spiral approach persuades through resonance.
Wait, I have to push back on this a little bit, though.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
If the fundamental architecture is a spiral, and it specifically relies on triggering emotional resonance rather than just presenting a straightforward thesis, does that mean top-tier internet writing is inherently more about emotional manipulation than sharing actual facts?
That is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to view it as a binary, that you either have hard facts or emotional fluff.
Right, like they're mutually exclusive.
But analyzing the mechanics of how these master writers operate reveals something much more sophisticated. They are not substituting data with emotion.
Okay, so what are they doing?
They are using emotion as the delivery mechanism for the facts. Pure logic and naked statistics often bounce right off a reader's pre-existing biases.
Or just their sheer cognitive exhaustion. People are tired online.
Exactly. If an article simply lists macroeconomic statistics about inflation, the average reader scrolling on their phone will likely tune out.
Sure, they'll scroll right past it.
But if the writer can make you viscerally feel the anxiety of a small business owner staring at a spreadsheet at 2 a.m, trying to make payroll in a shifting market,
your psychological defenses drop.
Exactly. The emotion creates a receptive space in the brain where the dense factual information can actually land, be processed, and most importantly, be retained.
Wow, okay. That reframes it entirely. So it's not manipulation, it's just acknowledging how the human brain actually absorbs information.
Precisely.
Which leads perfectly into the second major discovery from the author's research, rhythm over laziness.
Yes, this is a big one.
Because the author found that these top writers almost never, ever use paragraphs that stretch beyond three sentences.
Right. And the immediate assumption might be that this is just a practical formatting choice for mobile screens.
Because a massive wall of text is visually intimidating on a phone.
Obviously. But digging into the reading experience reveals it is doing much heavier rhetorical work. Short, varied paragraphs are fundamentally about controlling the reader's breath and cognitive load.
You know, this instantly reminds me of reading sheet music.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, when you look at a dense six-sentence paragraph, it's the equivalent of a fast, highly complex chord progression.
Right, right. Lots of notes.
Exactly. You have 16th notes flying everywhere. Your brain is firing on all cylinders to track the central argument, process the dependent clauses, weigh the supporting evidence. It generates a lot of cognitive tension.
That makes perfect sense.
But then the master writer immediately follows that dense block with a single-sentence paragraph. It just sits there, completely isolated on its own line.
The dramatic pause.
Exactly. It's the accent note. It physically gives the reader's eyes and brain a place to rest and allows the previous complex chords to actually resonate.
I love that analogy. And that highlights exactly why default AI writing feels so suffocating.
Because it doesn't know how to rest.
Right. Because of its academic training data, an LLM defaults to writing miniature essays. Every single paragraph contains six sentences, a topic sentence, three pieces of supporting evidence, and a concluding thought.
It's a relentless, uninterrupted march of complex chords.
There is no rhythm, no variation, and absolutely no rest for the reader.
It's all tension and zero release, and that lack of variation is deadly for attention spans.
It really is.
Which brings us to the third structural discovery, the engine of turns.
Yes, the turns.
The author highlighted that reader attention has massive inertia. If a writer provides three straight paragraphs of smooth, uninterrupted, highly logical analysis, the human brain actually starts to drift off.
It does. It begins predicting where the text is going, gets bored, and starts thinking about what to make for dinner.
Right. To prevent that, the writer has to throw a wrench into the gears. They have to use a turn, usually by introducing a but.
The turn acts as a structural shock to the system. You are cruising comfortably down the highway of the argument, and suddenly the writer throws the steering wheel hard to the left with a phrase like, "But here is the underlying problem no one is talking about."
It jolts the brain's prediction engine.
Exactly. The author's analysis of the WeChat writer Banfo revealed just how frequent these shifts are. In a single 3,000-character piece, the data showed 7 or 8 of these sharp turns, contradictions, or sudden shapes in perspective.
7 or 8. That guarantees the reader never gets too comfortable.
It does.
But I understand a human writer intuitively feeling the pacing of a story and knowing when to throw in a plot twist or a but. How does that actually translate to something measurable for a machine? It sounds incredibly subjective.
It feels subjective when we read it.
Yeah.
But structurally, it's just a mapped transition point.
Okay.
A turn is simply the insertion of a counter premise. The math is quite literal. For every X amount of supporting data, introduce a conflicting variable.
Ah. Nice.
Academic writing tries to sand down all the friction to make the logic seamless. Masterful internet writing intentionally injects friction because friction generates heat, and heat keeps the reader awake.
Friction generates heat. I really like that. Which brings us to the fourth discovery.
The big one.
Yeah, this is the one that really dictates whether an article stays hidden or goes viral. It's the concept of golden sentences.
Yes, the highly engineered engines of social currency.
This taps into the core psychology of how information actually spreads across social platforms.
It really does. When you see an acquaintance share a long-form article on their timeline, and they quote one specific punchy line from the text, we have to acknowledge a harsh reality.
Which is?
They likely did not read the entire 3,000-word deep dive.
Oh, not a chance. They absolutely skimmed it.
Right. They shared the article because that specific sentence perfectly articulated a complex feeling or observation they already held.
And by broadcasting that sentence to their network, it elevates their own status.
Exactly. It makes them appear insightful, sharp, or ahead of the curve. That is the essence of social currency.
And what the author uncovered is that people share articles not because they read the whole thing, but because of these specific sentences.
Yes, and these highly shareable golden sentences are not random moments of inspiration. They actually follow rigid mathematical formulas.
Right, and the formulas are glaringly obvious once you see the pattern. The most dominant structure identified by the author is the X is not Y, X is Z framework.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah, so a standard AI might output something like, "Artificial intelligence will significantly change the landscape of human employment."
Which is true, but it provides zero social currency. It's boring.
Exactly. The golden sentence version of that exact same thought is, AI isn't coming for your job. It's coming for the best part of your job.
Wow. Yeah, it leverages contrast. It sets up a common expectation, aggressively subverts it, and delivers a fresh insight, all within about 12 words.
It's so punchy.
And another highly effective formula the research identified is the ultra-compact judgment. In Chinese, this is often distilled down to just 4 or 5 characters.
Like a single absolute statement.
Right. Something like, speed is the moat. It's incredibly dense, instantly digestible, and practically begs to be quoted.
But wait, if every single creator starts relying on the exact same X is not Y formula to engineer their punchlines, doesn't the internet just devolve into a massive sea of identical, predictable fortune cookies?
That's a fair concern.
Won't readers eventually become immune to the math?
Well, that is the inevitable life cycle of any linguistic trend, right? Mm-hmm. The specific formulas will eventually fatigue and evolve.
People will get tired of X is not Y.
Exactly. But the underlying principle that readers require compressed, high-impact statements to use as social signaling. That will remain constant. The mechanism of social currency doesn't change, even if the specific syntax does.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So synthesizing this first phase, the code has been cracked. To mimic a compelling human vibe, the text requires spiral architecture, visual breathing room, rhythmic friction, and highly engineered social currency.
Right, those are the four pillars.
But recognizing these concepts as a human is entirely different from teaching them to an artificial intelligence. Because if you just open Claude or ChatGPT and type, please write with more emotion or be more vivid, the output is going to be disastrous.
Absolutely disastrous. Right. Because an LLM does not understand the abstract concept of a vibe. As we discussed, it's a token probability engine. If you ask it to be more emotional, you're simply telling the math to slightly increase the probability weights of adjectives.
So it just throws adjectives at everything.
Exactly. The AI will respond by attaching three dramatic adjectives to every single noun and ending paragraphs with exclamation points. It doesn't alter the fundamental, linear, six-sentence paragraph structure.
It's just a rigid essay with more exclamation points.
Right. To actually change the output, you have to forcefully alter the underlying token math.
Which is exactly why the author of this project abandoned vague vibe prompts entirely. Instead, they engineered a 435-line, strictly formatted, machine-interpretable markdown file.
They literally translated the messy psychology of human emotion into rigid machine code.
They really did. So let's look under the hood of this 435-line solution because it fundamentally changes how we think about communicating with AI.
The architecture of the guide is ruthless. It begins by explicitly outlining the seven core principles we just explored.
Okay, so it sets the ground rules.
Right. It provides absolute constraints, forcing the AI to prioritize story before theory and mandating that it must write for the person who shares.
But high-level principles aren't enough to fight the weight of billions of academic training documents, right?
Yeah, not even close. It requires surgical intervention.
And that is where the translationese kill list comes in. This part is just brilliant.
It's so smart.
The author realized you cannot just politely ask an AI to stop sounding formal. You have to give the machine a literal lookup table to overwrite its default probabilities.
So it forces a swap.
Exactly. The left column of the table lists the bad robotic habits. The right column provides the mandatory human replacements.
So if the AI calculates that the next logical phrase is conducted an analysis of, the system prompt physically forces the model to drop the probability of that phrase to zero.
And swap it for the simple word analyzed.
Right. Or if the AI attempts to transition with, in summary, the strict markdown rules force it to output. So here's the thing.
It's a forced downgrade of the vocabulary, just dragging the tone away from the lecture hall and into the living room.
And this pairs with an equally strict banned phrase list. The documentation explicitly bans transitional words like, however, furthermore, or as is well known.
And the author's note on this is hilarious. They pointed out that deploying a word like furthermore in the middle of a casual, engaging WeChat article is, quote, like showing up to a backyard BBQ in a three-piece suit.
I love that. It's so true.
It's a total atmospheric mismatch. It instantly signals to the reader's brain that they are about to read a textbook, causing their eyes to glaze over.
And beyond vocabulary, the markdown file dictates structural flow. It features an opening pattern library.
Oh, so it tells it how to start.
Exactly. Instead of letting the AI guess how to begin, it provides mathematically defined blueprints for an introduction, such as starting with a counterintuitive shock or establishing a massive contrast gap.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
It does.
Because the author takes this absolute beast of a 435-line markdown system prompt, loads it into Claude Opus, and then feeds those original 83 stiff translationese blog posts back into the machine.
And the before and after transformations are night and day.
They really are. The titles alone prove the concept.
Right. The AI's original unmodified title for one specific post was The Evolution of Business Models in the Agent Economy, a Paradigm Shift from Subscription to Consumption.
Which is, you know, factually accurate, completely logical, and entirely dead on arrival. There's just no way you're clicking on that on a Saturday morning.
No, definitely not. But after applying the strict constraints of the 435-line guide, the AI analyzed that same underlying data and rewrote the title to simply, Is Sauce Dead?
Wow. Is Sauce Dead? It's punchy, it establishes immediate stakes, and it demands an answer.
And the structural openings underwent a similar radical transformation. Originally, the AI opened that same article with the most boring linear thesis possible. This article will explore how AI agent technology is reshaping the fundamental business logic.
Snooze fest.
Total snooze fest. But the rewritten version forced to use the spiral structure. It opens with a highly specific scene.
What does it say?
It reads, last month, a SaaS founder who'd been at it for 5 years told me something. My biggest fear isn't competitors anymore. It's customers learning to use agents.
Oh, wow. Notice the mechanics there. It immediately introduces a human element.
Right.
It uses a direct quote to establish credibility, and it centers the entire opening on the emotion of anxiety. It pulls the reader directly into the spiral.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the author is very transparent about this. Applying a 435-line markdown file did not magically turn 83 standard blog posts into viral, internet-breaking sensations.
Sure, it's not a magic wand.
But it successfully solved the core problem. The resulting articles finally sounded like an actual human being talking to you over coffee rather than a machine outputting data.
The paragraphs were short and breathable. The rhythm had friction. The three-piece suit vocabulary was entirely gone.
But, I mean, if you force a literal lookup table on an AI, aren't you just replacing one kind of robotic writing with another?
What do you mean?
Well, instead of a textbook robot, it's now just a highly scripted internet robot following a different algorithm.
That is the exact limitation of any single rigid template.
Right.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the author realized that solving the problem for their specific blog exposed a much wider challenge for the whole ecosystem. Because right now, there are millions of independent creators, corporate marketing teams, and writers utilizing AI to generate massive volumes of text.
And they're all slamming into the exact same wall of soulless, exhausting output.
They all desperately need the underlying math. They need the explicit rules to override the translation ease.
They do, but the catch is the human writing is not a monolith. The 435-line guide we just deconstructed was mathematically optimized for one specific genre,
which was social commentary and tech opinion pieces.
Right. If you take those exact rules, the dramatic scene openings, the short, punchy paragraphs, the conversational tone, and forcefully apply them to a highly dense, data-driven financial analysis, it will sound completely ridiculous.
Yeah, a financial report shouldn't open with an emotional anecdote about a coffee shop.
Exactly. The rhythm of a dry, sarcastic tech review involves a totally different set of mathematical rules than a deep-dive business strategy breakdown. You cannot build one master markdown file to rule them all.
Which leads to the author's proposed solution. And honestly, this feels like a genuine glimpse into the immediate future of AI writing. The documentation outlines a vision for a ghostwriter-style library.
The ghostwriter library. This is where it gets kind of sci-fi.
It really does. The concept moves away from static prompts and into dynamic analysis. Imagine an AI system that acts as an analyst before it ever acts as a writer.
Okay, how does that work?
You feed it your messy, unformatted draft. The AI first analyzes the text and categorizes the intent. It recognizes, oh, this is meant to be a highly technical yet dryly humorous product review.
Right.
It then accesses a library, retrieves the specific mathematical constraints, paragraph rhythms, and vocabulary kill lists modeled after the best human writers in that specific subgenre, and applies them to your draft.
And it takes it even a step further. The author envisions a feature where you wouldn't even need a pre-existing library.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you could literally just paste in three long-form articles from your absolute favorite human writer. The AI would scan those texts and extract the underlying mathematical patterns of their unique style.
Wow, so it measures their exact average paragraph length.
It calculates their specific cadence of structural turns, maps the syntax of their personal golden sentences, and automatically generates a custom 500-line markdown prompt on the fly.
It is literally reverse engineering a human being's unique voice into a deployable algorithm. That is wild.
It's incredible.
So what does this all mean? When we look back at this entire deep dive, the core takeaway for you, the listener, is that good writing is absolutely not just about flawless grammar.
And it's not simply about structuring a logical argument either.
Right. Reading is a physical, psychological experience for the brain. It requires rhythmic variation. It demands visual breathing room.
It relies on the deliberate engineering of emotional resonance to make facts actually stick.
And the truly wild realization is that by breaking down the messy, subjective art of human emotion into strict, explicit mathematical rules, we can actually force machines to speak our language.
We can map a human soul onto a markdown file.
You really can.
This raises an important question, though, something for everyone to really mull over.
What's that?
Well, if AI becomes perfectly capable of extracting these underlying mathematical patterns, if it can seamlessly replicate the spiral logic, engineer the perfect dramatic pauses, and consistently generate flawless social currency.
Yeah.
Will we eventually prefer the AI's optimized version of a human style over the human's actual unedited writing.
Oh, wow.
If the AI can engineer our aha moments better than we can, what does that mean for the future of human creativity?
That is a staggering thought to leave off on. Mm. If a machine can map our emotional rhythms better than we do naturally, do we just let it take over the keyboard? We will leave you to ponder that one.
It's a lot to think about.
It really is. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take a moment to think about the rhythm of your own communication, and we will catch you next time.